Welcome to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. My name's Craig Barker, and I'm the head of public engagement. In the podcast Object Matters, what we attempt to do each episode is to actually get our guests to explore their relationship with a individual collection item or a series of collection items from the Chow Chak Wing Museum at the University of Sydney. This episode is something a little bit different and a little bit special, and it could go horribly wrong, but we'll see how we go. Instead of having one or two guests like I normally do, I've got nine guests. I've got the entire collection management team of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. And what we're going to be doing is not talking about individual objects, but rather about the collection as a whole and how we as an institution care for, register, look after, and make it engaging for our visitors as well. So I'm very excited about this. Firstly, thank you for joining us, everyone.
Hi, Craig.
Hi. Hi.
Now, normally I would, of course, introduce you individually, but we're going to do it a little bit differently this time. Can I ask each of you, we'll go around the table, to introduce yourself and your role at the museum?
Thanks, Craig. So my name is Marie Clutterbuck. I'm the head of collections here at the Chow Chak Wing. And for most people, that might seem a little vague. So for us here, collection management incorporates two departments that are normally in other institutions. That's registration and conservation. So most people probably also aware of what conservators do. It's a very exciting part of the museum that people love to have a look at, and Madeline will talk more about that later. Registration is broken up into a number of different roles, and that's what most of the people around the table participate and contribute to. But what the main parts are basically collection care, and that covers things like storage and loans, packing, transport. And then we have documentation, which covers the database and digitization and contracts. And then we have compliance, which is things that the university or any institution would make sure that we are doing correctly and we are auditable and we know what we're doing and how we're doing it and where all the objects are. So that's basically what we're doing here.
Thanks, Ray. That's a really lovely summary of a lot of complex roles that you all have.
Yeah, and so each person will talk a little bit about what they do. It's not the finite part of their role because we do a lot of different things. And one of the nice things about being in a small team is that we all get to help each other out and we all learn from each other and we all do a little bit of everything.
Julie.
Hi, my name's Julie Taylor and I am a registration officer specialising in collection care. And what that entails is the care of the collections in storage, but also in transit, so when we move it, which we've done a lot of in this previous year.
We're going to be talking about that in depth a little bit later on, aren't we?
That's right. So in storage, we look after the collections. We try to protect them from elements that may deteriorate the collection, like dust and light and too high a temperature, too low a temperature, too much humidity, too little humidity. I also look after the packing of objects if an object is going out on loan, but also the movement of objects between stores and sometimes within the building. That's really the nutshell of what I do.
Madeline.
Hi, Craig. I'm Madeline Sneddon, currently the museum conservator here at Chow Chak Wing. So I'll give you a brief overview of what the conservator's role is within a museum. The conservator's main aim is to minimise change and undertake collection care of collection materials. So a big thing that I do is condition checking, particularly loans and acquisitions and objects planned for display, to assess their current condition and requirements needed for their care. Another part of the role is conservation treatment. This may be carried out prior to display or loan of an object in order to improve its condition and the object's integrity. A conservator always has to respect the object's integrity by using reversible techniques and conservation grade materials, which are part of a standard that is nationally and internationally recognised. Also, another thing that we do in the conservation lab is analysis and research, and this may be on an individual object or several objects that are part of the collection. So analysis and research can then help us to understand many things, such as the materials held within the collection and how to best care for them, or past conservation treatments that may have been carried out. And conservators document an object's materials that are used, the current condition, analysis and data, and conservation treatments and reports with accompanying photographic documentation. This information is useful for the object's long-term care and may be referred to in the future. So then another side of conservation is preventive conservation. So many materials from which objects are made are inherently unstable and undergo chemical and physical changes as they age. So another main role in conservation is to minimise the impact of what are known as 10 agents of deterioration, such as incorrect light, temperature and humidity, physical forces, physical neglect, vandalism, fire, water, pollutants and pests. So therefore, a lot of the role of a conservator is preventive conservation. The main tasks include monitoring environmental conditions, such as Julie's spoken about, in storage and galleries. This is to ensure the space is stable and within correct light, temperature and humidity range. And another big part is integrated pest management, which is checking and possible treatment of objects such as new acquisitions or loans. This is to maintain a pest-free environment within the museum. And all of these steps that are used within conservation, the main aim is to provide collection care for collection material.
Thank you, Madeline. That's great. Museum photography, Dave.
Hi, Craig. My name's David James. I'm the in-house photographer here at the Chow Chak Wing Museum. I started as a digitisation photographer initially, before the museum was built. I guess my primary purpose here still is the digitisation of the collection, which in brackets means photography. I'm also involved in quite a few other projects. There's an infrared project happening with Sydney Analytical that I've been engaged with for quite some time. There's a bid for a bigger camera. We've converted a digital SLR and had success with that, so that hopefully will work in our favour. Moving forward to getting a more professional, high-end, dedicated camera for the purpose, so I'll hopefully be involved in ongoing work with them. I'm involved in many other aspects of photography around here. I photograph events and I photograph the museum physically. And they document the exhibitions and engagement, people, visitors and students. A lot of areas that I look forward to being engaged in moving forward. So it's an evolving role for me at this point. This is new territory. I'm a permanent fixture here now, where I was previously a contractor. So I look forward to the future in this role changing and becoming more engaged with the museum as a whole and offering new services and evolving my role here.
Yeah, and I think that's probably...
sums it up briefly for me.
That's probably a good point that kind of covers all of you too, doesn't it? The nature of all of your roles does change and evolve over time.
Yeah, the last 5-6 years has been very much dedicated to the building of this new museum, and now we're getting used to being in a new space and we get back to doing our jobs, principally, I think, and figuring out what that's going to be and what the forward projects are.
Now, of course, many of our listeners will be aware of the richness of the collections of the University of Sydney, but I suspect most people think that all the collection items are actually physically in the building, and of course it's not the case, both in terms of storage but also in terms of the way items are loaned around. So, Virginia, could you speak a bit about your role?
Hi, Craig. My name is Virginia Ho. I'm an assistant registration officer. My main responsibility is internal loans across the University of Sydney campuses. Requests for artworks and objects from our collections come from various departments and faculty. This involves artworks, portraits, public art relevant to either the building or the faculty. I normally would respond their requests by having a meeting with them, talk about their needs, and come back to the office and discuss their needs to curators, to Marie, and sometimes Julie, various people in the collection management team about the collection care requirement. I then proceed with collection, looking for ideal works that are suitable for their environment. I would assess the environment of the space and I would talk to the conservator. So basically working with curators, coming up with a solution, then once all parties agree, then I would actually coordinate the installation and finalise the loan.
Now, Amy, I wondered if you could address your role with collection care and where you have overlap with Julie and where you're different from the work that Julie's doing.
Hi, Craig. I'm Aggie Lu, and I'm an assistant registration officer. My major task is basically rehousing objects for long-term storage. We make the customized box and trays with archival materials to make sure the objects are stable yet presentable for long-term storage. So far, I've been rehousing a great variety of objects from historical photography, natural history, antiquity, ethnography collections. I've also rehousing the school education boxes for the school groups. So it is fun to work with rehoused objects, like making boxes, because each object are different. And so its material, the natural composition, the material, and its size and the weight all have to put into consideration when you are rehousing an object. So every task is different each time. And also, in order to make sure they are accessible for the user, you have to put all this accessibility into consideration when you are planning or mapping for a box or tray. It is quite fun.
Now, Rachel and Damien, your roles in many ways are very similar, but I wondered if you could both, you first, Rachel, but talk about compliance, and then we'll move on to talk a bit more about stocktake.
I'm Rachel Lawrence, and I'm a registration officer. I'm responsible for compliance within collection management. This includes collection stocktakes and organising valuations for auditing and insurance purposes. We stocktake a different collection each year, and last year, with all the crazy moves that were going on, we still managed to do the art collection stocktake. Because that's a requirement. And this year, Damon and I have just started doing the natural history collection stocktake. Each collection gets done every 5 years, and it's a really, really big task, and different collections are different sizes. I have other colleagues that help me. We get a team of volunteers to assist as well. And yeah, I think Damien might talk a little bit more about the process of stocktake.
I'm Damien Stone. I'm an assistant registration officer. I've worked across a whole lot of different projects with the museum, been an object handler during digitization, maintaining records in our database, stock taking different collections, and like all of the team here, working on the object moves that brought our museum objects into the building last year. Stock takes, definitely my favourite part of the job, where we check objects are in their correct storage locations. We make sure each has a museum registration number, and we update any missing catalogue details. By doing collection stock takes regularly, it means that collection material can be easily located in storage areas, and it's super rewarding when you find that object that's gone a little bit astray.
Not very often, is it?
No.
Now, Chris, we've spoken a bit about your role when we recorded your individual episode, but if you could just sort of review what your task was.
So I'm Chris Jones. I'm the Collections Manager Documentation. And documentation in the museum world in the past would have meant old registers, paper files, maybe a little bit of photography. But in the modern museum, what it really means is actually database. The database, which we use EMU, is fundamental to all of the processes that my colleagues have just talked about. We use it to record all of the activities that we do in terms of, say, stock take is really important for location control, cataloguing, describing the collection, talking about conservation work that happens, even like rehousing projects that are all captured in some way in the database. So you've got this central place you can go to see what's happened to the collection so we can describe it. And then capturing that information then allows us to manage it carefully, and so we can manage it in the correct way and sort of answer any questions. It also means we can share that information with the public. So a big part of what we do is capture information in a way that can be shared through our online collection search, which means that the public can then engage with our collection and sort of see things in the collection which they, if they can't come to the museum, they can see it online, or they can get excited about what we've got and come and see it in the flesh themselves. So Dave's talked a little bit about it, but digitization is a really big part of documentation. A photograph is a really important way of, for all of the work we do, managing the collection. If we can see what an object looks like, it's easier to find, it's easier to know what its needs are going to be, it's a way of recording its condition. So it's a really key part of collection management. So that documentation role sort of brings in all of these different activities and keeps it all in one place.
Centralizes it. Well, we got through all nine. Fantastic. Thank you, everyone. That was also great that you spoke last too, Chris, because you talked about that public interface through the collection search engine and the digitization project that you've all been involved in one way or another. But it's kind of interesting because, and part of the reason why I wanted to get you all in is, of course, for most museum visitors, there is a knowledge that there's that behind-the-scenes aspect of a museum, but most people have no idea how it operates and how it actually runs. So thank you for outlining your own individual roles within that, because so many people want to know what's happening. You guys are the engine room of the Chow Chak Wing Museum, although curators kill me if I said that probably. But
disagreement, I think.
But again, it's interesting collectively how we're trying to harmonise between what is seen by the visitor and what is actually taking place in the labs and in the storerooms and so on. So what I'm going to do now is to ask you guys some questions collectively, and feel free to jump in and disagree and critique our colleagues outside of the room as well. But I guess the first thing is that, as our listeners know, the Chow Chak Wing Museum is such a broad collection of more than 400,000 items. It's covering art, antiquities, natural history, fine arts, historical objects, you name it, we have it. I guess, and given that all of you have worked professionally in other museum institutions, do you notice anything which is unique or different about the Chow Chak Wing collection, or is how we operate relatively standard across most institutions?
The thing that's interesting about the Chow Chak Wing Museum and other museums which are multidisciplinary museums is that we work with a variety of different materials. And I think Aggie referred to this in her sort of rehousing sort of talk of like saying that she's having to challenge with like photography or natural history or scientific instruments. And it's like that diversity. And yeah, there are other museums which are multidisciplinary museums, but many of us have come from, say, art gallery backgrounds where, I mean, art is diverse and can be, particularly contemporary art, but nothing as diverse as a multidisciplinary museum like we are. And I think that's actually the fun of it. And we are privileged because, unlike the curatorial teams who tend to work in their areas, like we've got a natural history curator and we've got a curator who looks after our scientific instruments, and they work in one area or maybe two areas if they're lucky. We get to work across all of those areas, and so every day is different because we're working with a diversity of human production, of nature, of all the wonderful things that make up material culture. So I think we're very lucky in that respect.
I also think that due to that diversity, there's no way that any one of us can know how to work with all of it. And so museum workers are very consultative in their practice. So in my role in storage, like I had to confront working with human remains, for example, with mummies. So I did as much research as I could, because there's not a lot of mummies held in Australia, but you know, online there's a lot of information available. Working with natural history was also a big challenge for me. So my job is a constant learning curve, but we believe that you don't have to reinvent the wheel with any of this. There's people who have dealt with this kind of material out there, and we can consult, and we like to share information. We like, and we need to get the best result for the collection.
It's also interesting that as you were all speaking, one of the things that really struck me, and again, I've seen your work as well, but just how the collection management team, the physical proximity that you have to the objects is often far closer than the curators and my team working in education, for example. You in particular, Madeline, but all of you get so up and close with the object. What's that experience like, I guess?
I can speak to that. I'm having digitised a good chunk of the collection. I've really got quite an intimate experience with all of these objects, or a good portion of it. And this is an ongoing thing, so I actually have a fair engagement with the variety and the sort of scope of this collection, and it's been fascinating. Because we're part of an educational institution, my personal experience has been really positive, because if I'm in the presence of the curators whilst I'm working with any given object, I get a great explanation of the history and the background of these objects. Yes, it's on EMU and I can search it, but it's nothing like having ad lib information about something that you're working with at the time. And that for me has been invaluable, and that's part of the great appeal of this role for me, is I'm learning on the job all the time. And if I'm curious about something that I might be working on, then I've got this wonderful database in EMU that I can go into, and I can look at the background and find out how old something is, which is shocking sometimes, particularly when you're handling something and you discover it's 5,000 years old. It adds an extra layer of
collection care.
So yeah, for me, it's been a great journey, and may it continue, because there's never a dull moment. For me, it's a classical collection. I've worked at the powerhouse of theirs. It's quite quite a different collection to the experience I've had here. And, you know, it's a very, very enjoyable experience.
I mean, it's a rare privilege that we have because we get so up close and personal to the objects. And I mean, I've been working here for nearly 15 years and I still come across things in the last, in particularly with the collection moves, I saw things in the Nicholson collection I'd never seen before, even though I've been in and out of those stores for however long. Obviously, we have different reasons to be in the storeroom, not just looking at stuff, but yeah, it is a rare privilege. And I mean, I have a fine arts background, so as an artist, I was always interested in objects, always visited museums, and now I just feel like I'm the kid in the lolly shop being able to see it all and access it all.
I also sort of find that we've got two new colleagues, Jane and Eve, who are working with academic staff within the university to use collections to aid them with their teaching using sort of object-based learning principles. And I like how they can come to me and go, oh, we're looking for something, and sort of to look at the golden section, which was a conversation we were having yesterday. And yes, they're working with the curatorial teams, but because my work has a slightly different angle through that, through the collection, I can maybe suggest things that maybe the curators don't have at the forefront of their mind, because I've seen things which are maybe outside of their immediate focus or for whatever reason have been hidden away and haven't been found, but have been found through digitization processes or rehousing projects. So I think, you know, we can always add into that mix of the curatorial deep knowledge of the collection, but we can also bring in that other angle, I think, and it's really wonderful suggesting things that could be of use.
Now, moving on to the building, I want us to discuss the move of the collection. Before I do that, of course, we're in this wonderful new architecturally designed building that we collectively as a team, the museum team, but you in particular, Marie, from the collection management perspective, had a lot of input into spaces that we wanted. These are the rooms that when people come and visit us, they're not allowed to enter. But I wonder if you could talk about some of the spaces like the conservation lab, like the storerooms and so on, just to give our listeners a sense of the spaces within the building, what they like to work in and how we're using some of those areas.
Well, I guess I'd start by saying that the thought process of the physical construction of the spaces is probably like 5 or 6 years in the making. So even prior to the appointment of the architects, which then led to the appointment of the building construction company, Julie and I went on a bit of a tour around a few museums, enjoying, as Julie mentioned, the collegiate nature of museums and the willingness to share. We got the privilege of going to a number of stores to see what people were enjoying about their physical environment and how it worked, and also being educated in what didn't quite work, which also helped us, knowing what does work and doesn't work, you know, they're equally of benefit. So that went back, that we did that about 5 years ago now. So that led into the building construction, which was a lot of continuous meetings for a long time, which you were a part of. All of us were a part of many of those. But all of that led to a final footprint of what would be available for collection storage. And obviously we dealt with auxiliary spaces as well, as you mentioned, the conservation lab, but we have other auxiliary spaces like a receiving area, quarantine area, workshop areas, office areas, research areas. And all of those had to be thought through so that they work easily in terms of progress of where people work through. But the building then led to infrastructure of what actual storage we would select, and there were a number of different companies which, having spoken to other institutions, helped us figure out which ones were good and which ones weren't and which ones would work for us. And then what fed into what we wanted from those suppliers actually goes back to a larger picture of what we have in terms of the collections and what we want to bring in, what will fit in that footprint, what kind of storage that collection needs. So we ended up having a variety. We've got screens for some of the art 2D, we've got tills for some of the art 2D, we have compactors for 3D across a multiple collections, and then we have open shelves, and then we have drawer units. So we ended up with a diversity of storage type. And in order to purchase those, we had to know the footprint we had, and we had to know exactly what collections, even at that very early stage, like 3 years ago now, we needed to know what was going to end up in that drawer, at a macro level, at least.
Because we noticed the other day when we were doing a tour through the store that the compactors are all set into the concrete. And so one of our colleagues who we were giving a tour to was like, wow, so you must have, like, that's pre-construction. It's when they're laying the concrete, you know, foundation of the building, they're thinking about where the shelving unit's going to go. And I think to have that kind of foresight and that planning is a real challenge, because it's very hard to make changes once you've sort of got the concrete poured. So I think that sort of shows.
You're listening to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. For this episode, I'm joined by the collection management team of the museum, and I'd like to thank Marie, Julie, Aggie, Rachel, Damien, Virginia, Chris, Dave and Madeline for joining us. Now, I've got to talk to you all about the physical move of the collection across in a second, but of course, we're in a new museum building, but have a very historic collection dating back to the 19th century. And I guess Marie and Julie in particular, being with the team the longest, you know the old collection storage spaces.
Careful how you say that.
Well, you're not as old as the collection. But I mean, I guess I'd just like you to address, if you could, the changing nature of the way that museums, not just us, but all museums, have thought about collection care and some of the challenges and some of the improvements and the changes that you've made over the years.
Well, I think I've been here 17 years now, and I don't think the collection was recognisable from the day that I walked in, but that's been a lot of slow and steady changes and plans, and the wonderful addition of additional staff and the massive efforts of a lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
I would not have made it to this point without a great deal of help. And then luckily Julie came along quite early on, and our focus has been on improving those storage conditions, because that's the best and easiest way at a collection level to improve the care and the access of any collection, is by improving the storage.
Mm-hmm.
And moved multiple times into multiple buildings in that time, as the university has needed us to move out of one space and into another. And each time, while it was disruptive, we took advantage of each of those moves to improve the storage conditions of those collections.
Mm. Okay. Oh, no, absolutely. That's exactly where I was thinking, was that that's always been in the back of our minds, that, okay, it's inconvenient sometimes that we have to move because our space allocation has changed. However, you know, how we move and where we move to, all of that over time has improved access to the collections, which is so important. I think it's the most important thing. Access physically into the space, but also for the curators, so they know what they have, they know where it is. In some instances, it's arranged in certain ways so that it makes more sense when you enter the storeroom. For example, the Indigenous store, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander collection, did a lot of pre-work with that prior to moving in here, where we, particularly with the Yolngu collection, which is on display in Jalkeri, we actually organise the storeroom according to the organisational structure of Yolngu culture. So that was a big step forward, and it has continued into this building. And so it's kind of like water on a rock. You just sort of gradually chip away. Well, we don't like to use water in a museum context, but we gradually improve, we gradually make changes. And, you know, when I first started here, we didn't have much of a budget to throw at this kind of thing, but now we do. We have a better budget, and we have made vast improvements to the collections, all collections, and we continue to do so.
Right. Now, I guess the actual physical move of the collection into the new building, taking place in 2020, in the middle of the COVID pandemic, of course, so there were a few challenges that we weren't expecting in those early meetings from a few years ago that you talked about. But I wonder if I can ask you collectively to describe the physical move of the collection from previous exhibition spaces and previous storage spaces during 2020 in preparation for opening to the public last year. Take us through the process of planning and then implementing that move.
Well, as I said, it started with the physical construction of the space, and then it led to basically almost at an object level, shelf to shelf, that's the kind of detail that we needed. We did checklists, so we knew exactly what was on each shelf before we physically moved it.
So with the Nicholson collection, we conducted a stock take prior to moving into the new building, just because it's such a vast collection. So each shelf had a list that would travel with the objects on that shelf to its new location in the new building.
which I must say, one of the challenges of that process is keeping track of where objects are moving to. And so one of my roles within that collection move was updating the database with the new location. So the shelf lists were incredibly useful, because what you could do is you could actually then search for where did the objects all come from the previous location, and that would then quickly bring up those records of like relate to the objects that were moved, and then you know, move them all into this new location. So the process is actually very streamlined because of that original investment of doing the stock take, of printing out the reports from the database. So we had a good record of what was there. Then we had to be very respectful and respect the shelf list. And if anybody made any changes while the sort of the gap between doing the stock take and the move, which, you know, there was a little bit of movement because we're a dynamic organization, which changes things around, you'd update that shelf list. So we knew those shelf lists were good. And that actually meant that that process actually went really smoothly and was very easy. And it was actually the collections we moved, but we didn't have those shelf lists, which were much more challenging. I think the art collection was a little bit less controlled in that way and was much more manual in terms of that updating.
Yeah.
But for the Nicholson move, I think it was a classic textbook, very smooth, very well done. It's flexible enough to have some changes as we got to the shelves of, oh, this isn't really working, let's make some changes. Very few of those, very smooth process.
I mean, what about the physical challenge too, that we've got a collection which has everything from minute insects through to large Egyptian sculptures. So I imagine there's a lot of planning around individual aspects of the collection in terms of the best way for them to be cared for during the actual process of that physical move.
Sure. Good example of this is the Nicholson collection move that Chris is talking to. It was the move I was most nervous about just because of the complexity of the material, from glass to ceramics and quite large pieces in granite down to tiny little, you know, delicate glassware. But we employed an external contractor to assist us with this move, a company that moves art but also objects. And they happened to be moving another antiquities collection in Sydney. And their job is to work out how to move stuff. And so we knew that move was happening. It's a company that we've had a long relationship with anyway. And they let us know that that was happening. And so Marie and I went out and had a look at what they were doing and how they were doing it. And I instantly felt relieved the way that they were doing it. So it was really minimal handling. So when you're moving collection, you don't want to fuss too much. You don't want to wrap it all up in tissue and bubble wrap and all the rest. There's ways of doing it that are really simple, quite elegant. They take care of the objects and they travel safely, which is the most important thing. And so there's a lot of trust involved in that relationship with the external contractor, but I had, you know, three men at my disposal to follow my whims. But they packed, I observed them, I, you know, supervised their packing. I had Damien also helping and tracking all the locations, and Aggie did a lot of preparation for any objects we were a bit concerned about how they would move. We did a bit of pre-packing and we agreed on how that was going to run with the contractor as well. So it was, we kind of do a lot of risk management in this role as well. So we have to kind of think about worst case scenario and then prepare for that. And nothing broke in transit at all.
Yeah.
It went really well. No surprises there because, you know, these people know what they're doing and we believe we know what we're doing also. And it all went quite smoothly, as Chris said. So there are many layers to it. It's from the gross. So there was a large object move that I didn't work on, thankfully. That was all the really big, heavy, scary stuff that Marie worked on. You might want to talk about that, Marie.
I'm happy to talk about the large object move, but I guess it's just we had the art specialist, museum specialist company with us for 3 months, and that was about physically moving the collections. But the preparation for that move was at least 12 months.
Yes.
And as you said, it was in the middle of COVID.
Yes.
And so I think we did exceptionally well with all of those hurdles, not just a new building, trying to get a building built on time. And we've just been talking about the collection move. That obviously also incorporates the collection move of those things that went on to display, not just those things that went into storage.
Yes.
And so those moves had to be heavily coordinated with our exhibitions officer, with Luke. And he had to coordinate with his install team and the fabricators that were building all of the infrastructure for the design of the exhibitions. So there was a lot of timeline challenges, and the large object move was one of the first moves that we did because it was complicated. It did involve moving large things across into what ended up now, if you come into the museum, what looks like very confined spaces. So we obviously put them in first so that we had a lot of room to move when they first went in.
Yeah.
And then all that infrastructure was built
around it. But of course, they were also, on the whole, the far more robust collection items as well too, which, you know.
Yeah, I had a few. There was a couple of, you know, items that were still like, left me holding my breath a couple of times. But they all went in, and as Julie said, from the largest to the smallest,
everything
didn't have any breakages, which was amazing. We documented the location of them all, which is a credit to everybody.
Out of curiosity, how many, what is the object count for the move? How many objects were moved, do we know? Ballpark.
Come on, Mr. Stats.
Well, we did
write
report
it
on
down.
This one. I'm trying to think. People always ask these questions,
numbers.
And I'm terrible.
I didn't
numbers.
Write it down.
Over 110,000?
It was over. Actually, thank you, Madeline. It was. It was over 110,000 objects were moved in, and that includes coming in for storage, but also for exhibition. So it was a large number.
And obviously, that is not the entirety of the Chowchuck Museum collections. As you mentioned, this museum, CCWM, is not our only location. We have other locations across Canada.
I guess some of the challenges going forward is that for future research and for future exhibitions, you'll be still moving objects across when those scenarios arise. And I guess that's also probably a good opportunity for us to begin to wrap up, but really all the work you're doing is ongoing, isn't it?
So the doors have opened, but our work has really just begun. So we now have a new home here, and we're finalising. Aggie's still got rehousing to do. Julie's still figuring out where everything's going to go. Damien and Rachel still have stock tech to do. There's lots of photography, lots of loans, and lots of documentation to do. But in the shuffle into here, it has actually altered our presence in those other spaces around campus. And while we focused on this building last year, we actually need to focus on those other buildings and the care of the collections in those other buildings now that this shuffle is over for the next couple of years. So it doesn't stop in museums.
No rest for the wicked. Now, Marie, one of the important things about the Chowchuck Wing Museum is, of course, we are trying to integrate far more First Nations knowledge and stories into exhibitions, but also the way we work. Could you sort of talk a bit about, you know, how the behind-the-scenes team have actually worked closely with the Metro Land Council and some of the things that we've done in terms of establishing this museum?
Thanks, Craig. Yeah, it was actually one of the highlights for me was working with having a smoking ceremony. Not just one, but we had three smoking ceremonies. The public would be aware of probably only one that happened as part of the opening. But we actually had two to cover storage and the collection in storage. And that, for me, was a great step forward in our relationship with Metro. And it was good, not just the fact that it happened, but also particularly Julie and I speaking with them and other things that we can do to make the collection feel at home, if that makes sense, and at peace, and for those that visit to feel calm and safe in that space. We had the collection smoked prior to the move, where it was housed, and then we had this empty space smoked in CCW before it came in. So that was a wonderful experience.
Look, thank you so much for joining us this episode. It's lovely to actually have you all in the room. It's the first time, as I said before, the first time we've done multiple people, but it has worked, so thank you, everybody. And I guess from my perspective, what I would like our listeners to do is that when you are in the public spaces of the museum and looking at the exhibitions, to realise that there's a massive group of very hardworking volunteers behind the scenes, but also this wonderful team, the collection management team. So thank you, Madeline. Thank you, Dave, Chris, Virginia, Damien, Rachel, Aggie, Julie and Marie for joining us. It's kind of interesting. We normally do sort of one object at a time. We've done 110,000 objects. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Object Matters is recorded on the grounds of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. The University of Sydney and the Chowchuck Wing Museum acknowledges the traditional owners and we pay our respect. Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app and connect with the Chow Chak Wing Museum on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, News Extra, via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.